All right, we are in 2 Kings chapter 12, is where we're going to start out this morning, 2 Kings chapter 12. We did a study on the prophets, and now we're going back and looking at the kings of Israel and trying to correlate some of that timeline as best we can. Last week, we left off talking about Joash. Joash is referred to by both the name Joash and Jehoash. And in the next section or two, we're going to see a king of the north who was also called Jehoash or Joash. That's what makes sorting out these names so much fun sometimes, is there were, if you put it in our terminology today, you've got three Johns or four Stephens or, five Andrews, and which one belongs where. But we're looking at Joash in the southern kingdom. So he is the one who became king at the age of 7. We talked about some of that last week and the challenges, the unique challenges of that kind of a setup. His grandmother, the daughter of Jezebel, his grandmother's named Athaliah, killed all of her grandchildren in an attempt to seize the throne, ruled for between 6 and 7 years, because in her 7th year, he became king. And really, the primary leadership there was the high priest, Jehoiada, who was also his uncle. All right, so we left off last time talking about the chest of Joash, where he wanted them to take a special offering to repair the house of the Lord and get things back in order, and the priests were very reluctant to do that. So he took a big chest, drilled a hole in it, put it by the gate of the house of God, and made it known that this is the place for the special offering. And the Bible says that folks responded, the money came in, they were able to repair the house of God, and what was over and above the cost of the repairs, they used to replace some of the vessels of the house of God. So all in all, Joash reigned 40 years. We're going to pick up here in chapter 12, verse number 15. Moreover, they reckoned not with the men in whose hand they delivered the money to bestow it on workmen, for they dealt faithfully. The trespass money and the sin money was not brought into the house of the Lord. It was the priests. All right. So that's where we ended up last time, where the workmen dealt faithfully and the repairs were done. Okay. Now, that brings us to the death of the high priest Jehoiada. So if you hold your place here in 2 Kings and then find 2 Chronicles chapter 24. 2 Chronicles 24. Again, we'll go back and forth a little bit. 2 Chronicles is the only account that records this next step here. 2 Chronicles 24. Look with me in verse number 14. When they had finished it, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, whereof were made vessels for the house of the Lord, even vessels to minister and to offer withal, spoons and vessels of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Verse 15. But Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days when he died. 130 years old was he when he died. Okay? I would say, yeah, that's old and full of days. Okay? Whatever your definition of middle age or advanced age may be, I realize I could get myself into a whole lot of trouble here right now. But whatever your definition is, I think we would all agree that 130 years old would be old and full of days. Okay? So Jehoiada lived 130 years. Why? Well, if you go back into the promises, those that God promised a longer life to those that honored him and served him at times, and I think that was the blessing of God. Verse 16, they buried him in the city of David among the kings because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and towards his house. It's very interesting. He was honored as being part of the royal family, even though his primary function was the house of the high priest. He was buried among the kings. That also, I think, is a hint, if not a direct statement, that he had a lot to do with the running of the country, particularly while his nephew was 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 years old and in charge of making decisions. He had I think, a large influence in all of those things. But we talked about this last week. I tried to lay the foundation for this. But if Joash becomes king at 7 years old, and they say, the king of Syria is advancing, what do we do? What's a seven-year-old say? Eat ice cream? You know, what do you think we should do? So really, you know, that he had grown up relying on advisors, or if I could say this another way, he needed the help. And I mean, all of you who have had children know that that stage of life where at a certain point you have to let them make their own decisions and, you know, rise or fall on the consequences of those decisions within reason. I'm not saying, you know, that we say, all right, well, just, you know, ruin your life and don't try to stop it. But the point I'm trying to emphasize is, how do you as a parent transition to viewing them as an adult? I mean, there's a part of your mind in which they're always this big or this big or this big, you know? And so Jehoiada the priest and the other advisors that were around him no doubt always kind of had that in mind. And so I imagine they kind of treated him that way, like he needed advice and that kind of thing. And he probably got used to it. There's a certain, if you talk to Brother Stevens and Brother Love and others who have borne the full responsibility of being pastor, you know, they'll tell you that there's a great weight of responsibility that goes with that. I mean, there's a certain relief factor in saying, I don't know, I'm just the assistant, you'll have to ask the pastor. You know, there are times when there's a great relief in being able to make that statement. You know, being on the other end of it, well, pastor, what are we going to do? And, you know, that decision rests largely with you. You know, there's weight to that. I use that as an illustration to say, I would not be surprised if Joash enjoyed to a certain extent kind of, well, what do you think we ought to do? And kind of leaning on advisors at least for a while and that kind of thing. But eventually, Jehoiada, his uncle, who was his primary advisor and his primary influence in the things of God, eventually he died. All right, now look at verse number 17 of 2 Chronicles 24. Now after the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah and made obeisance to the king. Then the king hearkened unto them. All right, now I'm just calling this simply listening to flattery. Okay? They made obeisance to the king, which means, you know, they fell down and showed him honor and deference and all of that. But the next phrase says he hearkened unto them. Okay, I think that gives us an indication they tried to get on his good side, tried to compliment him, tried to ingratiate themselves, and it was because they wanted something from him. Verse 17, he hearkened unto them. Verse 18, and they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served groves and idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their trespass. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them again unto the Lord. And they testified against them, but they would not give ear. Okay, so you have listening to flattery that leads to backsliding. So this is why I have tried to lay this foundation, because he grew up kind of just leaning on advisors and doing what he was advised to do for the most part, that kind of thing. Well, now that same trait gets him into trouble. He's listening to the advisors again, only these advisors, unlike Jehoiada, the high priest who advised him to serve God, these advisors influenced him to idolatry. You see the groves there, those were the places of worship that were always associated with idolatry. And so he was influenced away from the Lord. I think he sincerely wanted to do right. The chest of Joash and the repairing of the house of the Lord and all that, I think there was a time when he sincerely wanted to do right. I think this is an instance where he failed to stand up and make a decision when he should have. And I think all of us can be guilty of that. At times, it's one thing to know what we ought to do. It's another thing to have the backbone, if I could say it that way, or just the resolve, the fortitude to do it. And he gave in to the influence here. Verse 20, the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, which stood above the people and said unto them, thus saith God. Okay, now this is the son of Jehoiada. Jehoiada's his uncle. He was the high priest that had influenced him for a long time. Middle of verse 20 again, thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandment of the Lord, that ye cannot prosper? Because you've forsaken the Lord, he hath also forsaken you. Now that's consistent with things we read in the New Testament as well, isn't it? Draw nigh to God, he will draw nigh to you. Resist God, and he will resist you. God resists the proud, gives grace to the humble. Okay? But here they said, because you've forsaken the Lord has forsaken you. What was the right response in this scenario? What should it have been? Should have been humility, repentance, you know, turning to the Lord. What was the choice that was made? Verse 21, they conspired against him and stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king in the court of the house of the Lord. Man. I mean, it's one thing to order his execution. It's another thing entirely to carry out the death sentence in the court of the temple. Okay, this was not coincidental. This was not, you know, just where they happened upon him. This was a very deliberate choice, I think, on the part of Joash. Verse 22, thus Joash the king remembered not the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him and slew his son. And when he died, he said, the Lord look upon it and require it. Okay. That, in essence, he was saying, may God judge you for the sin that you're doing. Now, remember, we said this is Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest. Jehoiada the priest has died at this point, being 130 years old. So chances are Zechariah was, you know, what we would call at least a middle-aged adult in our terminology. We're not given his age, but nonetheless, Zechariah was right in this instance, and Joash was wrong. Joash listened to the wrong influences. They influenced him away from the Lord and toward idols, and he ended up killing the son of, very really, the man who saved, preserved his life, helped put him in power, you know, helped influence him, and had done so many good things for him. Aren't you glad that we never see those kinds of things today? Aren't you glad that we always see young people being grateful for the things that they've been given? And we see folks, you know, showing respect and appreciation for the situations they've inherited. Obviously, my tongue is so firmly implanted in my cheek with that statement. I might bite it off if I'm not careful. I'm pointing that out to say that's not a new phenomenon. And the reality is individuals must make their own choices. Okay, Joash was given a tremendous opportunity. He was made king at age 7. Okay, he was given an opportunity to influence the country towards the Lord, and he did that for a very long time. But when he was influenced by these other advisors, he was no longer an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 16-year-old, and naive. I mean, at this point in his life, he was an established adult and should have known better. I think he did know better. And yet he made the wrong decision. He was influenced away from the Lord. He chose to go a different direction. That's why I called it backsliding. I think he genuinely wanted to do what was right at one time. But, you know, he turned away from that. He went away from the Lord to the worship of idols. Now, for someone who's had that same opportunity, his uncle was the high priest, the highest religious officer in the land. He had a direct line to that. We cannot in any way, shape, or form say his decision was a lack of religious education or religious knowledge or, you know, didn't know the Bible or anything like that. Pure and simple, it's just a choice that he made, right? So if he could make that choice, what's to say that we couldn't make the same choice? Okay, I submit to you that that is on the table for each of us. I'm not advising that choice. I'm just warning that this is not an isolated phenomenon, rare occasion, but rather, no matter what stage of life you're at, whether it's the child, Joash, or the teenager, Joash, or the young adult, or the established adult, we must continually choose, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Okay? The term in the New Testament that's very often used is the term reckon. Now, as Southerners, we've become accustomed to that term. You going to the ball game? I reckon. Okay? Are you going to go to this event? Yeah, I reckon. But the term reckon means to calculate. Literally, it's an accountant's term, to calculate or to put to the account of. But it means to think about and then to act on. Okay? And we must continually think about what the Lord has done for us in our salvation, in our sanctification, in His provision for us, and you know all the things He's done, and constantly renew our choice. I'm going to serve the Lord. You know, I'm going to continue to press on. Because, I mean, if we're honest, there are times when other options can look more appealing. Doesn't mean they're right. The bait looks really, really good until the fish bites it and finds out there's a hook in it. Okay? But there are times when it can look like, why am I doing this the hard way? What are we accomplishing? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? We can be, that's the tools of the devil to try to discourage us. But the truth is, if Joash, having the chief religious officer of the entire land as his primary advisor, if he could still backslide, then there's nothing to say that you or I couldn't if we don't guard our walk with the Lord, okay, at whatever age or stage of life. He chose to turn away from that which he knew was right. Now, look here in verse number 23 of 2 Chronicles. It came to pass at the end of the year that the host of Syria came up against him, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem and destroyed all the princes of the people from among the people and sent all the spoil of them unto the king of Damascus. For the army of the Syrians came with a small company of men, and the Lord delivered a very great host into their hand because they had forsaken the Lord God of their fathers. So they executed judgment against Joash. So what you see here is the judgment of God. You see we've already read the prophecy in verse number 22. And here we see the fulfillment. The king of Syria comes. The king of Syria comes with a relatively small army, and the Lord delivered a large army. That very much matches with the statement there that they had made, that Zechariah had made in verse 20. Why transgress ye the commandment of the Lord, that you cannot prosper? You've forsaken the Lord, He's forsaken you. All right, well now it's coming to a fulfillment. It's coming to a head. So the end of verse 24, they executed judgment against Joash. Verse 25, and when they were departed from him, for they left him in great diseases, his own servants conspired against him for the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest, and slew him on his bed, and he died, and they buried him in the city of David, but they buried him not in the sepulchres of the kings. And these are they that conspired against him, Zabad the son of Shimeath, an Ammonitess, and Jehozabad the son of Shimrith, a Moabitess. Now concerning his sons and the greatness of his burdens laid upon him and the repairing of the house of God, behold, they are written in the story of the book of the kings, and Amaziah, his son, reigned in his stead. All right, now, put your marker here, if you would, and go back to 2 Kings chapter 12. 2 Kings chapter 12, verse number 17. Then Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath, and he took it. Hazael set his face to go to Jerusalem. And Jehoash, which is the alternate name for Joash, king of Judah, took all the hallowed things Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, his fathers, kings of Judah, had dedicated, and his own hallowed things, and all the gold that was found in the treasures of the house of the Lord and in the king's house, and sent it unto Hazael, king of Syria, and he went away from Jerusalem. So when you put those two things together, he suffered great losses militarily, politically, and then he decided, all right, fine, I'm just going to try to buy my way out of this. I'm going to, in essence, wave the flag of surrender, give him all the treasures that he's looking for. Hopefully he'll go away and leave the rest of us alive. And that's what happened. Hazael, king of Syria, came, fought against them, and God delivered him as a form of judgment. Okay? What's interesting to me is if we go just a little ways back into chapter 12, we're talking about the chest of Joash and the offerings that were given and the repairing of the house of the Lord and the extra went for this or that. How many years down the road was it when I think maybe some of those same offerings ended up going to Hazael, king of Syria? I mean, we see the same thing with Solomon. Down the line, some of the things that he had dedicated were hauled away and used other ways. Other kings down the line ended up cutting off the gold off the doors where all the doors were carved wood overlaid with gold. They melted off the gold to pay the tribute money and all those kinds of things. Just very, very interesting. Very sad and disappointing. But, you know, that doesn't mean that, well, it's going to eventually get misused, so we should never give an offering to the church. No, 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 that's not what this means. That's the cynical way of, you know, trying to justify a decision you've already made. Okay? The reality of the situation here is that a decision to turn away from the Lord caused them to lose God's blessing. They would have never had to turn these treasures over if they had sought the Lord and served the Lord as God intended. Okay, this situation could have been very different had he refused the flattery and the desires of the new advisors after the death of the high priest. So you have the treasures being given to Syria, and you put the two accounts together. Chronicles tells us he was in great diseases, and he would have died of poor health, but he was assassinated here in 2 Kings, chapter 12, verse 19. The rest of the acts of Joash and all they did are not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah. And his servants arose and made a conspiracy and slew Joash in the house of Millo, which goeth down to Silla. For Jozachar, the son of Shimeath, and Jehozabad, the son of Shomer, his servant, smote him, and he died. The Chronicles account tells us that it was an Ammonitis and a Moabitis that were the mothers in that scenario. What do we know about Ammon and Moab? How were they related to Israel? Cousins, yeah. Those were the illegitimate children of Lot. Okay. It's interesting how many times those connections come back, throughout the history of Israel and Judah. But they assassinated him. Second Chronicles says, for the sons of Jehoiada the priest. Which makes me wonder if there were others that were killed that are not recorded, other than Zechariah who prophesied against him. Okay, so he started out in honor, he started out in serving the Lord, he ended in dishonor, in an assassination, and he was buried, and here in Kings we're told the same basic thing. They buried him with his fathers in the city of David, Amaziah's son raised in his stead. But Chronicles tells us they didn't bury him in the king's graves. Very interesting. I think that was an acknowledgement that of the poor way that he had ended. Okay, so his assassination is recorded there in Kings and Chronicles. Lessons from the life of Joash. I mean, first of all, I think we see that not everybody has an ideal childhood. I mean, what was his childhood? Dad was dead, and his grandmother killed all of his siblings and cousins. I don't think that would be an ideal childhood, do you? Grew up in the house of his uncle, in hiding, had no friends, couldn't go play. You know, you can, if you put yourself in that scenario and use your imagination a little bit, you could come up with all of the things that kids would pout about or kick the ground or, you know, complain about if they were in a mood to do that. He didn't have an ideal childhood situation. I mean, did it turn out better? Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's so much disgust in every age, but particularly in our age, about, well, this situation is a result of this that happened to you, and this is so, and I just wanted to say, not everything's ideal or equal or fair. But God can use folks from any background or situation if they will decide to serve Him. Okay? God can turn the broken pieces into something useful if we'll allow Him to. Okay? It's not an automatic disqualifier. Or, as we see in the lives of many others, growing up in an ideal situation is not an automatic qualifier. Individual choices are necessary in both situations. Okay? So, not everyone has an ideal childhood. I mean, you may think this is obvious, but I'm going to repeat it anyway. Influences in the life of a child are extremely important. Okay? Parents are influences. Grandparents are influences. Teachers are influences. Friends are influences. Voices are influences. All right, what does voices mean today? Websites, blogs, YouTube, podcasts, television, you know, et cetera. I'd say radio, but you know, there might be three or four that you know still do that. But in here, that may be more prevalent. But if you go to the other building, college age and down, radio is that thing in the car that you use to hook up your phone and play over the car stereo system. You know, the tuning to a radio channel, why would I do that? That's all crackly. I'm just saying, you know, we could say radio. And the reality is some of those things are out there. But influences, voices, philosophies, they're crucial. The Bible says as long as Jehoiada lived, Joash served the Lord. And then later on, he listened to different influences and he failed. Okay, which brings me to this point. Every individual must make choices regardless of the influences around you. Okay? God didn't bless Joash directly because his uncle was Jehoiada, nor did he judge him because his uncle was Jehoiada. Why did God judge him at the end of his life? Because he chose idols. Why did God bless him? Because he chose to honor the Lord in the house of the Lord. Okay? So individuals must make choices regardless of the influences, meaning just because our kids are in church does not guarantee, apart from an individual choice, that they'll be saved. Does not guarantee, apart from a choice on their part, with encouragement and prayer and guidance from us, hopefully, but you know, to choose to serve the Lord with their life. Right? All of us are accountable to make choices regardless of the influences. Now, this is my take on it. Oh, and it's gone. But I didn't add this one to it. A person can be sincere at one time and backslide later. That's my take on it. That's what I think happened with Joash. Right? If you disagree, okay, I think we could probably make a case. But I think Joash was sincere, and then later on he made a choice to walk away from it. I mean, in the New Testament, there was a church that was told, you know, you used to be hot, and now you're lukewarm, right? So it can happen to folks that genuinely know the Lord. I think this is an important takeaway from the life of Joash, and that is this. A lack of individual purpose leaves one susceptible to wrong influences. What I mean by that? Individual purpose. In other words, you making a choice for yourself. All right, now how many times do teenagers say, I want to make my own decision. I want to make my own choice. Well, younger than that sometimes when they decide they want to pick what they wear instead of have mom, you know, match them to their siblings. Okay? Or, you know, I want to pick out my own stuff. And sometimes, you know, you go somewhere and you just have to give a disclaimer. He dressed himself. She dressed herself. You know, I want to make my own choices. I mean, it starts kind of young and it continues to grow. But while that is true to a certain extent, there's a far greater responsibility with that, and that is when we get to making more serious life choices, we must individually have a purpose of life, a purpose of heart. I'm going to do what's right. That's why Joshua 24, choose you the gods which your fathers served, or choose the gods of the Amorites, but as for me and my house. Okay, this is what we're going to do. I mean, the reality is, however far you try to go to fit in, it's never going to be far enough if you're trying to serve the Lord. Okay? Whatever avenue of, you know, entertainments or adventures or you name it, you can make concessions, otherwise known as compromises, you know, to try to be the cool parent, the cool grandparent, the, you know, the cool family, whatever. But it's never going to be enough to satisfy the world. And yet, unless you just completely turn your back on the Lord. I mean, there has to be a point where you say, all right, fine. We're going to be different, and that's okay. We don't do it like them, and that's okay. If you are not okay with being different, if I could say it that way, you're going to be more susceptible to influences on yourself and on our families. Which means there are times when, I know this is almost quasi-blasphemous in certain circles, but there's times when you have to be willing to be the parent instead of the buddy. You have to be willing to be a firm grandparent instead of, the fun one, if that comes down to a decision of right or wrong. Now, I'll leave the, how many chocolate chip cookies they can have discussion between you and your children. Can I watch this? Can I go here? Can I go that? What I'm saying is we won't outgrow some of those responsibilities, okay? And I'm not advocating make your kids hate you. That makes you a good parent. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is, in this room we have parents and grandparents. So our responsibility is to have a purpose and maintain it and be unmoved when we get pushback. But also, at the same time, be willing to do our best to explain it. Here's why we do this, within reason. The why questions can be never-ending, especially when the goal is just to change your mind, not to actually understand the purpose. Okay? But an individual purpose is essential. A lack of individual purpose leaves us susceptible to wrong influences. Okay? And that's true of children, that's true of teenagers, that's true of young adults, that's true of middle-aged adults, that's true of experienced adults. Okay? Whatever stage of life we are, we're susceptible to that, which is why we've got to constantly come back to the Word of God. All right? Any other observations that you have, from the life of Joash, or lessons you think that would be applicable here? I know this isn't an exhaustive list. This is just what I could come up with. All right? So where does that leave us then on our study? So this is just a brief review. We have Rehoboam. This is from starting after Solomon. Okay, you have Rehoboam and Jeroboam. The left-hand side there is Judah. The right-hand side is Israel. If you notice, there's not a ton of longevity on the right-hand side. That's because they were primarily, all of the ones on the right-hand side, the kings of Israel, they were all idolatrous. Almost all of them followed the idolatry of Jeroboam. And in addition, Ahab and others followed Baal as well. Okay, so you had Asa who served the Lord, Jehoshaphat who served the Lord and had longer tenures. All right, now, picking up with Jehoshaphat here, this is where we've been more recently in our study. You had Jehoram after Jehoshaphat. Remember, Jehoram is the one that was married into the house of Ahab. He didn't last very long. And then his son lasted 1 year after him. And then you had Athaliah, who was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So now on the left-hand side with Judah, we're beginning to see the shortened times. Why? These are the ones that turned away from the Lord. These are the ones that embraced idolatry, and you had much shorter times. On the right-hand side, you have Ahab. His son Ahaziah for just 2 years, Jehoram, we had one on each side there, 12 years, and then Jehu. So Jehu was one of the longest reigns on the side of Israel, the northern kingdom. All right, Jehoahaz is next, but where we just ended here was Joash there on the left-hand side. Okay, he reigned 40 years, and we're told that he began in the seventh year of Jehu. Now, this is where it gets fun, trying to coordinate these dates. If you look at two or three or four Bible references, you're going to come up with different numbers. Okay? Now, depending on what study Bible you have, you may even have different dates. If you have a Scofield Study Bible, which is what I'm using today, you see at the top of the center column, there's dates there. In the top of the center column, you see that throughout the study Bible there. Scofield uses the same system that I think a lot of them use, but it was done by a man by the name of Usher. He was a Jewish man and spent a lot of time trying to correlate secular history with Bible history and such, and uses Usher's dating system. But there are others that vary slightly and so forth. But Usher made a statement that said, particularly with the kings of Israel, they used a certain standard. They judged them from, they judged their time frame from Nissan to Nissan. Now, that is not a brand of vehicle, like some of you may be thinking. Okay, Nissan was a month on the Jewish calendar. I'm pretty sure that was the first month of the year. You remember when God brought them out of Egypt, pastors going through Exodus in Sunday morning service, and he said, this is going to be the first month of the year to you. God reset their calendar. Okay, so they judged it from there to there. So they basically, it was like this. If someone theoretically became king the last day of the year, his second day as king is Nisan 1, and then he died the next day, that would be counted as 2 years that he reigned, because he reigned part of 1 year and part of the next year. Okay, now to us that makes no sense. That's not the way we track things at all. But that's the way it was done. You know, he reigned 7 years, could mean he reigned 6 years and 3 months, but he was into that seventh year, so they counted it as seven. All right? That factor alone greatly influences how we try to tabulate the dates here. I mean, I've given you how many years so-and-so reigned and this and this and this, but trying to put exact numbers on it, this was, you know, 850 BC, 840, 920, it's much more difficult to do because of their dating system not exactly matching up with what we have, okay? I say that because the next statement here in chapter 13, verse 1, in the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Ahaziah, king of Judah, Jehoahaz, son of Jehu, began to reign. Okay, so that introduces Jehoahaz here on the right-hand side as being in the 23rd year. However, we're told he reigned 17 years, and then his successor began in the 37th year of Joash. Well, 23 and 17 is 40 in my math, right? So I'm like, okay, how does this work? Well, that's how some of this stuff works. The dates are not always as neat as we would like them to be, and it's not because, well, there must be an error in the Bible. It's rather because their way of reckoning was different than ours. I mean, some would say that, okay, you're in your, right, if you just had your 29th birthday, well, you're in your 30th year. We would say we are 29 until we complete the full cycle. Okay, now I've turned 30. Others would say, okay, the minute you have your birthday, you're now in your 31st year, you're 31. Okay? It's just a matter of how we look at it and how we count it. But if you look at the math here, there's going to be some things that are a little bit confusing. I don't think that it's the end of the world. I don't think that that means that this is unreliable, but rather, you know, there are explanations that I gave you enough to hopefully, you know, whet your appetite if you're interested, and for the rest of you that don't really care, that's as far as I'm going to go with the explanation on the dates. But just understand, as we move on to the right-hand side of the column now with Jehoahaz, if you start doing the math, it doesn't quite line up the way we would do it, but nonetheless, Jehoahaz would be the next king. All right, we'll pick up there, Lord willing, next week. Let's close in prayer, and we'll wrap it up for today.